Welcome to Woods and Water, South Carolina. This is going to be a bang, 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 bang show. No way around it. A lot of good information. We're going to talk to Andy Montgomery. I was with him at Sabine last weekend. I apologize for those that listened to a repeat show last weekend, but it just, my plans didn't work the way I wanted them to, and I couldn't get a show together. So we caught up with Andy, listened to him. Then we got Grant Woods, and you get Grant Woods on the phone, you just let him talk. So, like I said, it's going to be a busy one, a lot of information. It's a good show. I'll be back at the very end after we talk to these guys, and we'll just tie a knot and hang on. It's a good one. Well, you know, it's kind of nice when you're riding down the road and you say, "Hey, Andy Montgomery, what you doing?" He says, "Come on by." Yeah. So I'm sitting there in Andy's backyard, and he just came back from Sabine and had another good tournament.
It was good, Roger, and it's good to see you.
Yeah.
Good to visit. Been a while since we've been on the show.
It has been a while.
An interesting meeting the first time we met, didn't we?
That was January 2015.
Yeah.
When I was...
February,
because it was practice.
That's right.
February 15, if you weren't listening back in 2015, I got on the show one day and I was talking about, because I had got my marshal assignments for the Classic, and you know that was when it was going to be cold and all, and I drew Andy Montgomery and I said, I think it's going to be cold enough, I'm going to go buy me a motorcycle helmet. And my phone lit up, it was a text from Andy Montgomery saying, "Buy two." And that was our first meeting and practice on Wednesday for the class, and it's been fun getting to know you better each year.
It was a pretty cool because, I was practicing, got a little bored.
Right.
You know, I just got my new Nitro, never had a radio in my boat.
Wow.
So I'm on Hartwell. I turn the radio on, search the channels, just a little scan.
Sure.
You the first one pop up, and you talking about me. I said, "Hey, I think I got that guy's phone number."
Who is that guy? I think I know him. But yeah, we've had a good time talking and seeing each other ICAST, seeing each other around some of the tournaments and all that. It's been fun.
You seem like you're everywhere.
Yeah, like a bent penny. I just keep coming
there
back
you
around.
Go.
Never know where I'm going to show up.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's the fun, because I get to see a lot of different places and I get to see you guys in a lot of different settings.
Correct.
And every one of them's different.
That's right.
And speaking of different, Sabine. I mean, you went down there. It's a tough fishery anyway. Now you got half the water because Louisiana is off limits. How'd that?
You know, the half the water deal was probably the biggest factor. You know, we could only fish Texas versus in the past we was able to fish Louisiana. And it kind of spread the guys out.
Right.
It doesn't have a lot of big fish in it, but okay. It's actually a very, very good tournament venue in my opinion. You know, the town of Orange puts on a incredible show.
Yeah.
They're incredible hosts. They run the tournament great. And, you know, we don't have to catch 20 pounds every time we go.
Sure.
Everybody
sure.
don't do that.
Yeah.
So having a tough fishery doesn't bother me. The only thing that made it challenging is was all packed into one little area. It's no different than, Wynyard here. Wynyard was a great tournament venue. Great. You just had a lot of options, a lot of different rivers to fish.
Yeah, four or five rivers you could
That's
go fish.
Right. And Sabine's very similar. We go out of Orange, you run down, you can stay in the Sabine River, or you hit the intercoastal just like we did at Wynyard.
Okay.
Go several different directions, and there's a lot of little rivers go off of them, Taylor's Bayou, the Natchez, Cow Bayou. Just a lot of options. Very, very similar to Wynyard. I like them type of venues. I like the places where you have options to run a long way. And you can kind of spread yourself out. But, unfortunately, we didn't get to do
it. Couldn't spread out this time
around. It was cut in half.
Right. You'd have three or four guys in one canal, you passing each other as you work the other canals and all that. Do you have any of that, or
I did. Okay. There was about 10 guys in the canal that I was fishing. It was pretty long, but, yeah, we definitely passed each other a lot. And, it was pretty crowded. But the Sabine... You don't catch a lot of big fish, but you get a lot of bites.
Bunch
I caught
of them.
50-plus fish the
okay.
first day. So it's a great venue to take a kid fishing. I caught 50-plus with 10 more guys in the canal. You know, if you just go out there on a weekend and there's
sure.
not many people fishing, you can really have a good time. It's real similar, again, to Wynyard.
Yeah.
You know, some of them rivers down there, you go out not in a tournament setting through the week, you can get a lot of bites. So even though it's not a lot of big fish, it's a really, really good place to take kids.
What'd you catch them on?
I caught them on a buzzbait some, and then I caught them on a Strike King raised bug, just pitching it around. I caught my better ones on a buzzbait, and we kind of figured out, me and Ott figured out, that the fish was the bigger fish was actually off of the bank, kind of in the middle of the canal. And then you read Hackney won it, focusing on the middle of the canal. You know, we passed each other in the canal. We was fishing, I think, midday two, and, you know, it was like, hey, bud, you know, these bigger fish are off the bank. And, you know, he'd got all his bigger bites off the bank, and I'd got mine, and it's just, we just didn't lay with it like Hackney did, and maybe figured that out a little too late. Because you could pitch up around the bank and catch all the, you know, 10, 11, 12 inches you wanted, but to separate yourself, you had to get that two and a half pound bite. And, you know, I got a couple of them. I actually lost a 5-pounder on day two that would have really changed the whole course of the tournament. But I got enough of them 2.5-pound bites to, you know, to get me in the cut, and I didn't have much of a chance to make the top 12. I did, so there was one little section of that canal we was fishing that seemed to have the better quality fish. I kind of stayed away from it on day three because, you know, we thought he had a good chance to make the top 12, and I didn't get any big bites.
You and I have been friends a long time, haven't you?
Since the Elite started, that's when we got close. And it's you know, it's very rare that you can find somebody fishing against them in what we do that you know is 100% honest with you and wants the best for you, and then vice versa. So it's a good deal. It's a tremendous deal. I mean, it's helped us get checks different places.
Going back to Hartwell 15, I remember we were out there on the lake running around. All of a sudden, you chopped the throttle and started pulling off. You hitting it, and I'm like, okay, what's happening? And here comes Ott.
Yeah.
And y'all pulled up out of there and started talking about what was what and all.
We didn't lie to each other.
Nope.
No.
It's cold and it ain't no good.
Yeah. It's cold and it sucks.
That's it.
You know, it's good to have somebody you can bounce ideas off of for sure.
Absolutely. Two things in this tournament we had. Jacob Wheeler got disqualified because he and his marshal both got out of the boat.
Right.
And that's a done deal. And then Swindle had a 6 fish in the live well thing. And you had one last year. I'm sure it's not, it's probably an easy thing in the excitement and all that to do. So yeah. What happened with yours?
So a little bit of the backstory, Ott actually had that happen to him at Okeechobee like 2 years ago. And, you know, he could remember. He said, man, I used to think, how could anybody do that? Well, when he did it, I still thought, like, dude, how could you do that? How could you possibly do that? So in my situation, I was at the St. Lawrence, right?
Okay.
And I was catching a lot of fish early. I caught, but they was just 15-inch smallmouth, you know, just 2-pounders. Up there, 2-pounders, nothing.
Okay.
So I caught a couple 2-pounders, put them in the live well, and then I got thinking, you know, if they die, we can't call a dead fish, and that's bit me in the past, too. I said, if one of them dies, I'm in trouble. They ain't going to do me no good. So I caught, you know, 7 or 8 more and just throwed them back. Didn't even keep them. They was keepers, but I didn't even keep them. Well, then I got to thinking, well, you better put 1 or 2 more in there. So I kind of lost track. I mean, I did. I went in and I caught a pretty good largemouth, culled. No, I didn't cull. I just put the largemouth in, got back up there, went to fishing, and I thought... And I got to thinking, you know, did you put 3 or did you put 4 of them 2-pound smallmouth in there? I couldn't remember, and I went back there counting, and it was a sick feeling. I mean, it's a sick feeling. But how I handle the situation is, even though I know the rule and what I'm supposed to do, I still call Tripp, our tournament director. Anything questionable on the water happens, you know, breakdown, whatever. Hey, Tripp, this is the situation. What's my options? It's just a way to cover yourself. And
right.
I called Tripp, said, hey, Tripp, I got 6. Pretty sure I need to cull my cull down, and I got a 2-pound penalty. And he said, yep, 2 pounds. So that's what I did. I culled the 5. You get a 2-pound penalty. 2 pounds in our deal is really big. Swindle ended up finishing 2nd, I think, with the 2-pound penalty.
I think so, with the 2-pound. He was still about 4 pounds back.
Right. It didn't cost him the win, but it's still – That could have been a big deal. It's been.
Well, I mean, you think, in the end it didn't cost him, but if he hadn't, the psychological part of having to cull a fish, knowing you're 2 pounds down, it changes the way you fish, it changes the outlook. I'm sure for a little while you're rattled.
Yeah.
I mean, it can't help but affect the way you fish.
So Aaron Martins did it at the Classic this year at Hartwell, too.
I did not know that.
And, you know, Aaron's one of the most meticulous guys on tour, and he did it. And I think, I say this hesitantly, but, once it happens to you one time, it's not going to happen again. At
lesson
least I
learned.
Hope so. Yeah, it's a lesson learned. I can't tell how many times I count to five during the tournament day now. I know how to count to five. I got out of Clemson without knowing how to count to five, but I know how to count to five now.
Life's a rough teacher, isn't
it? Yeah, it is. Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Well, let's see. You got lacrosse coming up, which is probably been there before.
Twice, yeah.
And
three times, actually.
What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's another one of them situations where you need that 3 to 4 pound bite to separate you.
Okay.
You know, there's going to be a lot of 12-pound bag. The fishing's incredible up there. We catch a ton of fish. Going out a great time of year. A lot of grass. They smallmouth play some. They've actually won up there. This time of year, it's going to be a lot of largemouth. And I've had some 50 and 60 fish days up there catching largemouth. So it's just a lot of 2 to 2.5 pounders. And getting that 4 pound bite that separates yourself is what's going to do it.
Now, is that just weeding through schools of 2.5 pounders?
Yeah.
Or is it just they get to the bait faster, or what is it?
It's probably they get to the bait faster, and you just kind of weed through the schools. But they'll probably get to the bait faster. You know, a 4 to 5 pounder up there is an old fish. You know,
okay.
He may be 8 or 9 years old or whatever, just because they don't get giant up there.
Okay.
So naturally, the younger ones got a little more energy, get to the bait faster, and. You know, there's a little bit of luck involved in getting a big bite up there. I don't know how you could target it. You just put yourself in position to catch a lot of fish.
Right.
And hope you get that good bite.
And then you go to Lake Owyhee.
Yeah.
Pierre, South Dakota. Never been there. What's the word?
The only person I've talked to is Gary Klein that's been there.
Okay.
And, you know, he said it's got a lot of smallmouth. He said they're really dumb. I think it's going to be similar to Middle Axe. We're really going to catch them. They're really, really going to catch smallmouth. There's going to be big bags. We did that at Middle Axe. You know, Middle Axe wasn't known for smallmouth fishery. Well, not a lot of local pressure. And we went there and just cremated them. And then, you know, had a lot of tourists coming in. And it's a little bit harder to catch them at Middle Axe now than it was when we first went there. I think the South Dakota deal is going to be the same way.
You know, you talk about when we go to a lake, we're looking at bass, largemouth, smallmouth, you know, spotted bass or whatever. But when you go to these especially these northern places, I mean, they're out there fishing for walleye. The locals are after an eating fish.
That's
and
right.
Have you ever had walleye?
Yeah, they're great.
Oh, man, this is some of the best fish you've ever put in your mouth.
Yep.
And that's why these fish are so under pressure, because the locals are not – we don't want to catch bass. We want to catch walleye.
And if you actually look on the, you know, the internet, if you search for the South Dakota deal,
yeah,
you'll see the smallmouth nailed up on a board just like the walleye. I mean, they're going to eat it. So they catch a few smallmouth,
right.
And to them, a smallmouth's a trash fish. They don't want to catch them. But if they do catch them,
it's going
you
on.
Know, they keep them. They don't target them, though.
Right.
So the ones we're going to be targeted probably hadn't seen a lot of baits.
No.
So it's going to be good.
It's going to be good.
We're going to catch a lot. I don't know about the size, because I mean, typically up north, they have some big smallmouth.
Sure.
So I'm sure it'll take 20 to win or something. Or maybe even more, 20 a day. Maybe more.
That's 4 pound average. That's pretty good fish.
Yeah.
Especially when it's smallmouth.
Yeah. I'm kind of different. I ain't crazy about catching smallmouth. I don't know why. I just ain't. You know, they don't, people think they're aggressive, and they do hit top water hard and stuff like that. But, you know, spinner baits and stuff, I can tell you when a smallmouth bites my spinner bait versus a trash fish. I call it a trash fish. Up there, it's not a trash fish, but pike, jacks.
Oh, pike, yeah.
They knock slack in your
line.
They
will.
And you think that's what a smallmouth will do, but actually, you'll just be winding your spinner bait, and your rod will just start bending over.
It's heavy.
They just come up behind it and get it. And me, personally, this is going to sound crazy, but personally, fighting a fish is not what gets me excited about fishing. You know, me, it's the bite. That thump. That's what gets me
slacking the line.
That's right. And a largemouth will slack the line more than a smallmouth will. People don't expect that.
Yeah.
But they will.
Yeah.
They will, for sure.
Back on the other side of More Woods and Water, South Carolina, and Annie Montgomery. back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. It is always great to talk to Dr. Grant Woods. He is one of the most gracious guests I've ever had on this program. We both got busy schedules, and we play that email tag game until we get a time we can both sit down and breathe and talk for a few minutes. So welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina, Grant.
Roger, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. You know, we've been trying to get this in since, I think, February or something, but...
The National Weather Service in Greenville-Spartanburg has issued a severe thunderstorm warning for northwestern Pickens County in upstate South Carolina until 3:45 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. At 3:12 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, a severe thunderstorm was located 10 miles northwest of Pickens, or 5 miles northeast of Jocassee Gorges, moving south at 10 miles per hour. Hazard, 60 miles per hour wind gusts and quarter-size hail. Source, radar indicated. Impact, minor hail damage to vehicles is expected. Expect wind damage to trees and power lines. Locations impacted include Pickens, Table Rock State Park, Keohe Tugsaway State Park, Jocassee Gorges, Sunset, Sassafras Mountain, Nine Times, Rocky Bottom, Lake Keohe and Lake Jocassee. Scattered trees and power lines will be blown down in the warned area. Seek shelter inside an interior room. Brief damaging winds will blow down trees and power lines over small areas. A brief period of large hail is also possible. Seek shelter inside an interior room. The storm is producing frequent and intense lightning. Turn off electrical appliances. Do not use corded telephones. Do not take a bath or shower. Please report damaging winds, hail, or flooding to the National Weather Service Greenville-Spartanburg by calling toll-free 1-800-267-8101 or by posting on our Facebook page or tweet up using hashtag NWSGSP. Your message should describe the event and the specific location where it occurred. Repeating, a severe thunderstorm warning has been issued until 3:45 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time for the following county, Pickens, South Carolina.
You know, whatever it takes. I like
sure.
Turkey meat. And, you know, but I take some kids hunting, and it's not as easy. You know, you want to set in the blind, put a decoy out, call. Turkey flies off the roost, comes in, you shoot it in the head, and it's all a good morning.
Yeah.
That wasn't happening this year, buddy.
Wow. Where all'd you go? You started off in Florida. Take us on the road trip.
You know, we went to Florida and had just a great time. And one good thing was it was so cold there weren't any mosquitoes out, so that was a blessing.
There's always an upside.
The snakes, gators, and mosquitoes were all at bay this spring. And I was wearing a coat. I was wearing like a pretty heavy coat turkey hunting down there.
Okay.
And this is south Florida. And then we went to Tennessee, and Tennessee is one of those states, one of the few states in America that I know of, that the opening week is usually timed perfectly where the gobblers are very responsive.
Okay.
Like, you know, Tennessee-Kentucky border, I hunt right on the border there.
All right.
And Kentucky opens 2 weeks later, and every year on opening day in Kentucky, the toms are with hens. It's just horrible.
All right.
But Tennessee, 10 miles away, opens 2 weeks earlier, and you drop your box call, and three gobblers will run over you. They're just at that stage.
All right.
This year, so I go to Tennessee thinking, man, we got it right this year. We're there opening week. There's a lot of turkeys on this property. We got to get it done this year. I walked my fanny off. Finally heard one bird gobble, got up the mountain where he was, and we played peekaboo around the mountain about five times and never did get a shot at that thing.
Wow.
So it was just an odd year. Then we come home from Missouri's opener, and then Daniel went to Kansas for the that Kansas has an early archery only season.
Right.
Tagged a nice bird out there, and then we killed some more birds here in Missouri. And we had a great year, but it was not a traditional year.
Did Ray get her a turkey?
Got a turkey.
Okay,
and Ray killed an absolute Ozark monster, and that was You know, daddy and kids is always a special time, but
yes, sir.
This bird come in like I thought he would. The only bird I had all year that come off the roost to the call.
Okay.
Coming in, got out there about 70 yards, putting on show. I'm just sitting there soaking it up. You know, I'm just waiting for things to come through. Skirts us at a, you know, just out of range over the mountain. You can hear him gobbling behind the blind. We turn cameraman, child, dad all around in the blind, zip the back windows up so we're not silhouetted.
Yeah.
Peek out the back windows now. And I had the blind against a tree, so we're like looking around a tree to see the turkey. He's out there at 80 yards now and just gobbling his head off and won't budge. Finally, a hen comes into view. And we're, you know, my daughter's skipping school, so I'm a little nervous because I'm telling her, honey, I'll have you back by 9. It's now 11.
Okay.
And I'm just, I start cutting and doing everything I can to the hen and finally get the hen to come in. Now, this is really funny. So the hen walks 5 feet from the blind. And I'm telling her, honey, the gobbler's coming. Don't do anything. Don't move. Don't spook the hen. Just let the gobbler come to us.
All right.
And I'd given her the rangefinder. My daughter's now a little older. I'd give her the rangefinder, and she said, Dad, that pile of leaves out there is 40 yards. Okay, that's our marker right there, honey. Don't shoot past that pile of leaves.
Okay.
All right. Tom gets out there, and I wasn't really paying attention to which pile of leaves she's talking about. And I said, Ray, is that the pile of leaves? Shoot. No, Dad. And I said, shoot, Ray, shoot. He's going to go. And I can tell that Tom's getting a little nervous by now.
Yeah.
I'm yelling, kill the thing, Ray. And for those of you who don't know, my daughter's old enough to take the pressure, and she's also a national champion skeet shooter.
That's right.
Not
she
using
is.
Guns. So I'm like, kill it, Ray, okay? I've worked this bird for 4 hours. Kill the thing. So she ups and shoots. Thing flops. I run out there and get it. We're all happy. And I notice when I pick up the bird and turn around, I'm like, dang, that's a long 40 yards. And I'm like, Ray, why don't you range me again? So, well, Daddy, you're not the leap pile I was talking about. A little miscommunication there. 67 yards.
Oh, wow.
God blessed us. I don't know. Pellet hit the thing in the head. He dropped like a rock. I don't know how it happened. I'm just, you know, you just take it.
Sure. Wow. 67 yards. That's a long 67 way.
67 yards. And I'm not promoting that shot. Please
no.
Don't send me a bunch of hate mail. It was miscommunication. Absolutely just, you know, wrong leaf pile.
Yep.
I don't, you know, duh. We're in the woods. There's a whole bunch of leaf piles out there.
Didn't have time to go out and spray yellow paint on the leaf pile, so you know what we're talking about.
Yeah, so it was a great hunt. Lots of time with my daughter.
Good.
Fun hunt. You know, it was all good, but not a traditional turkey season. You fizzled your heart. It's really hard for me to say it, but your trouble's getting ready to start.
You know, I hear a lot here in South Carolina. I'm not a turkey hunter. I'll be up front and honest. I got about 4 years' worth of tags in my desk because I get them every year. Had the best intentions of at least going out and sitting in the woods one day during turkey season. I never seem to make it out there. A lot of guys are telling me around South Carolina, turkey numbers are down. You know, we dropped our level, our limits from 5 to 3 a couple of years ago, several years ago now. And they're still saying numbers are down. What do you see in nationwide? I mean, he's seeing a downward trend altogether.
In most areas, most certainly Missouri, which used to be the number one turkey state by far, in most areas, numbers are down. And I think there's several factors. Of course, habitat degradation.
Sure.
Just not as good a habitat as we used to have. Monocultures,
okay.
You know, either solid pine stands, 400-acre soybean fields, whatever. Not the native habitat we used to have. Predator numbers are up. Pelt prices are still way, way down. States like South Carolina are putting out incentives, bonus ear tags,
sure.
Whatever, trying to get people to kill more predators. But you know what? Predator hunting's fun, but it's work. It's hot.
Oh,
it's
is.
Nasty. You know, it's work. And hunting is great, but it won't remove as many predators from the landscape as trapping. And trapping is hard. I love to trap myself. If I could make a living trapping, I would, but I'm not that good a trapper.
Okay.
And fur prices are horrible. But trappers do a huge positive service to society by balancing the number of predators. You got to remember, and people say, well, when no trappers, you know, when Noah floated over, but there was a balance. And
sure.
Now our landscape is very fragmented, and it's fragmented in a way that favors predators. Let's think there's garbage dumps everywhere. Those critters got food to eat even when they're not catching a rabbit.
Right.
We can sustain those populations even when game populations are low. And so when predator populations build up, it drives game populations even lower.
Yeah.
And I'm not one of those scientists that says, well, woe is me, let's just live with it. I'm like, hey, let's take control here. We're the dominant species. Let's get this back in balance.
Yeah. And trapping's hard. I mean, is it not true that in trapping you got to check those traps every 24 hours?
Every 24, almost every state has a 24-hour check, which is humane and,
sure,
2 feet away. You don't want an animal laying out there for 3 days.
No.
Now, traps don't hurt animals. Everyone thinks, you know, you see the stupid TV commercials that make it think, oh, my gosh, you know, the sky's falling, all the ice is melting, and predators are suffering.
Right.
Folks, that's absolutely not true, okay? I was given a seminar in Wisconsin earlier this year, northern Wisconsin, right on Lake Erie, and I was up there in late March, the opening weekend of their youth turkey season, okay? You think about this. Opening weekend of youth turkey season, there was 2 feet of snow in the woods. How you want to take your young papoose out there turkey hunting and there's 2 feet of snow in the woods?
Not very easily.
Yeah, and think about the poor turkeys trying to survive. And it was, I'm a southern boy, folks, and I'm staying in this hotel looking out at Lake Erie, and it's 2 feet deep in ice in late March. I'm thinking, man, what's wrong with these people? Why is anyone up here? I keep moving south somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. Some people just like it up there.
Yeah, no, it's, and they're great folks, great hardworking, hardy folks.
Oh, absolutely.
Great folks. But I'm just, man, it was cold up there. I'd be walking from the places I'd give them seminars back to the hotel or whatever. Man, that wind coming off the lake was like, holy mackerel.
Oh, hello.
Yeah, like I could have talked a little longer if someone kept the heater on.
Yeah, the 24-hour thing is tough because, you know, like a lot of people in here in the state, you know, you're, where you hunt's an hour, 2 hours away.
Yep.
And you think about trapping, and now you're talking about 4 hours every day. Unless you can go there and stay for several days, and you know, a short time like that, will you find any? Will they find your traps? You know, you just don't know.
It's, yeah, you know, there's some good things. You know, raccoons are a major predator, especially for turkeys. So you can use the little, I use the little Duke live traps and the cage traps. And
okay.
They work great. And you can, you know, if you're down there at hunting camp for a weekend or something, man, you can set 10 of those and wear out some raccoons.
Okay.
They're inexpensive. Coons are easy to catch. And what I do, we keep all the pelts and the ones that my wife didn't want to make a blanket or something out of. Man, we just get them tanned and give them away to kids at school and stuff. There's always something to do with pelts.
Oh, yeah.
Kids Everyone love loves them. A good pelt, except
Everybody.
For, the, you know, the loonies out there. Everyone loves a good pelt.
There you go.
And well, we got a coon blanket, you know. If my labor was counted and everything's counted, things might cost about $10,000. Don't tell my wife that, you know. But it's too hot. I mean, it's beautiful. It is a beautiful blanket. I'm just telling you, folks, I'm not like if you're looking at my office desk right now, you would say, that guy doesn't know what beauty is. I mean, that's a mess. But this blanket, my wife loves it. It's super warm. It is beautiful, but it's heavy. Pelts are heavy. I see how the mountain men stayed warm in the winter because it's too hot.
I hear you. Nature's insulators are great. All that hollow hair, buddy, it traps that warmth and just lays there.
Man, you want to make mama happy, you get her a big old queen size or king size pelt blanket, that thing will light up a room. It looks gorgeous. Just turn the heater way down because it's going to be hotter.
Way down. Man, y'all just turned episode number 446 on Growing Deer TV. Wow, did you ever think when you started it, it'd go to this?
No, absolutely not. Really didn't. We've been so blessed. No kidding aside. So blessed. And we were dumb enough to start on the internet before the internet was really a craze and figure out, you know, some of the ins and outs and, you know, don't do this, do that type things. And it's not me. I have a great, great team, just awesome team. My wife has a master's degree from Clemson, local folks there.
There we go.
In marketing. And so she understands all that Google stuff. I'm a wallopologist. So I'm a blood and guts guy.
Right.
She understands that backdoor stuff and all that stuff. So, but if you have a good show and you provide useful, credible information, unlike TV, people can just cut the link and send it to their buddy.
Sure.
And then they sent their buddy and they sent their buddy or whatever. So, yeah, we have viewers, I think, in 100 and some odd countries around the planet.
Mm.
And it's really interesting. You can watch on the Google stats Monday morning. You can tell when people go to work around the globe.
They
start watching. It's kind of sad because they're watching on, you know, the work dime.
Sure. Yeah.
And I'm a conservative person.
Yeah.
Wouldn't want my employees watching it on when I'm paying them to be out, you know, doing whatever they're supposed to be doing.
Right.
But, yeah, it's Growing Deer has been really and just the people we've been able to meet, just super high-quality outdoors men and women throughout America. I've been really just blessed through that. I get super nice emails every single day.
It's a good place. I mean, you got 446 episodes covering most anything, an outdoorsman, a conservationist, land manager, whatever your niche in life is, there's something there for you. And speaking of that, you know, we were going to try to do this back in, I think, February when we started trying to get the first one out. But what do we do? Okay, we're in the June, July, and August now. What should we be doing as far as land managers, habitat? What do we need to be doing here in South Carolina right now?
You know, especially in places with poor soil or, you know, degraded soil, which is most of America, by the way. I read this really neat research the other day. I think this is fascinating and relates to deer work, that a can of spinach in the 1930s had 9 times more nutrients in it than a can of spinach now.
Wow.
And that's just an indicator of how degraded our soils have become due to tillage and erosion. And folks that don't know this, I went to Clemson also. I also went to Clemson, lived in South Carolina for many, many
long
years.
Long time.
Yeah. And lived down in Abbeville, folks, for those local folks there. Lived down in Abbeville, used to hunt down there in Abbeville County.
Yeah.
And the average topsoil loss statewide in South Carolina is 17 inches. Just think about that. 17 inches is washed out in the ocean. And that top 17 inches is where most of the nutrients, we didn't used to have that red clay showing. It was covered by black, humus topsoil. And during the cotton farming days, and no one did wrong. They didn't know any better.
Sure.
No one knew any better. You cut forest down, you plowed, and when it didn't produce, you moved on to the next place, cut forest down, plowed. And that was what they did, literally. And no one knew any better, but it massively degraded our soils. And the nutrients aren't there. The good thing is, we and other brilliant farmers and researchers, university researchers, have discovered how to regenerate soil. And there's no snake oil, no rich, there's no product for sale here. But if we do 4 basic laws, and if you think about it, this is how the Great Prairie was developed.
Right.
If we have a living plant as many days out of year as possible, in South Carolina, that's like 11 and a half months.
Right.
As many days out of year as possible, because plants are taking carbon out of the air
mm-hmm.
and pumping it into the soil. Black dirt is black because of carbon, folks. Carbon is the most common element on the planet, okay? Our body, if you cremated it, not to be crude, or did something to it, the number one element is carbon,
yep.
Period. And so we've depleted carbon. Red dirt has very, very little carbon in it. Carbon is black.
Okay.
So if you have plants taking carbon out of the air, which they do, and they're actually pumping it out of the roots, and you never till those roots, you never disc, you never till, other plants will follow those roots that found nutrients and moistures and follow those same root paths down. And then I always want armor on the soil, rule number 2 of building soil health or regenerating soil.
Okay.
I never want to see bare dirt. I haven't used a disc in 15 years, literally. I mean that literally.
Okay.
I'm gonna plant right through the existing crop. I may terminate it with glyphosate or use a crimper. I prefer to use a crimper
yeah.
and not have to use the herbicide. And I'm gonna plant through the standing crop and have, so I've got a new root growing, and for deer hunters or turkey hunters, I've got constant food. I'm never bearing the table, so to speak.
Okay.
And then I'm gonna plant a diversity of plants. The Great Prairie had a wide range of plants. We think about the Great Prairie, massive herds of buffalo and elk. Yes, elk were a prairie species driven into the mountains by the European settlers.
Okay.
There were elk in South Carolina, if you don't
yes.
know this. And buffalo in South Carolina, by the way.
I did not know that.
So, the woodland buffalo was all over South Carolina. And there's a diversity of plants. And diversity of plants is important, not a monoculture, because different plants extract different nutrients out of the soil and out of the air. And so they're pumping it back into the soil. If you've got a monoculture, you're taking away a certain set of nutrients, making a depletion, and only putting certain nutrients back in the soil. When you've got, like 7 different species, like my food plot blends, like right now, I don't just plant soybeans. I've got soybeans and buckwheat, which is really great at extracting phosphorus, which means big antlers. And I've got sunflowers, which extracts zinc and some other critical minerals. And by the way, looking at that food plot's a lot prettier than just looking at 100% sunflower or soybeans out there.
Sure.
And then in my fall blends, which would be the next thing South Carolinians are going to plant, getting kind of late to plant summer blends.
Right.
I'll have 8 or 9 different forage species in that fall blend. I'll have a radish for it very early. I'll have some course, some different species of wheat in there. I'll have buckwheat that frost may or may not kill. I'll have some legumes, an annual clover, and a winter pea. And so I'll have legumes, and I'll have the grasses, I'll have the brassicas all working together. And just think about this. I've always got a legume out there 12 months out of the year. Over every acre of the planet, over every single acre, there are 78,000-plus pounds of nitrogen in the air, over every acre. Why would you ever pay for nitrogen?
Really?
There are over 78,000 pounds. We just want a couple hundred pounds per acre.
You just got to capture it.
If you plant a legume, it's going to take the nitrogen out of the air and pump it into soil. And then if you have the soil covered, you never till it, and you've always got it covered, what people don't think about, and me too, I spent the first couple of decades of my career looking on tops of dirt, kind of like an iceberg.
Right.
I was missing the bigger part, what's happening below the dirt, the root system, and all the beneficial insects and worms. You know, we generically hear the term insect or bacteria. We think of bad, right? I mean, just everybody does.
Right.
It turns out there's about 1,700 beneficial species of bacteria to every one harmful one. Like, I love the hunting ads that say, spray this on your body and it'll kill 100% of the bacteria. Yeah. If you killed 100% of the bacteria in your body, you would die within seconds.
That's right.
You would literally die, literally die. So I want to promote earthworm food. And this sounds funny. I'll probably get some hate mail over this one, but I'm not an antler farmer.
Right.
I'm an earthworm farmer, because if I have plenty of earthworms, I'll have big antlers.
Okay.
And earthworms, gosh, I wish you'd Google this. Earthworms are the God's miracle soil builder.
Oh.
They aerate it perfectly.
Yep.
There's no way we can till the soil as good as earthworms do. There's earthworm species that go up and down, and there's earthworm species that go side to side. So they're tilling soil perfectly. They allow water to go into the soil versus running off the soil. They turn dead, decaying vegetation and rock minerals into useful fertilizer. So on my property, folks, I haven't added any fertilizer in 5 years. No lime, no fertilizer. Think of the cost savings in 5 years. Because I finally built up a big enough earthworm population. They're doing all that work for me.
And they're doing it 24-7,
365. 24-7,
365.
And if you go to Stuff Mart and buy 5 pounds of worm poop called vermiculture. That's what vermiculture is worm poop.
Okay.
For your garden or for your potted plants or whatever. Right now, I just looked this up the other day, it's about $12 to $17 for 5 pounds. A healthy earthworm population, this will be so big, most people won't believe it, but you can Google it. There's research at University of Georgia and Pennsylvania State, all kind of great schools working on this now. A healthy earthworm population will make over 1 million pounds of dirt per acre per year.
Wow.
Put that in your hat, folks, for free. For free. Now, earthworms going to have food. So when you plow the field, when you plow or disc a field, you're killing by physical action earthworms by the gazillions.
Yeah.
You're also destroying all their habitat. You're crushing all their little holes and dens and eggs and all that stuff. But if you just crimp the cover crop, like a herd of buffalo walking through the prairie and trampling down everything, that decaying forage becomes the ideal earthworm food and cover. And they're eating that and taking it down in the dirt when it gets drier or hotter, defecating that out, making the perfect fertilizer. It's just you just can't beat God's system. It's a wonderful, wonderful system. And the cost savings I'm experiencing by using way less herbicide, no fertilizer, no lime, bigger deer. I'm in the county. This is absolutely true. I mean, we show a show every week. We can't
lie.
We got new content every week.
Yep.
I'm in the county here in southern Missouri, not northern Missouri, where big deer are from. I'm in southern Missouri. It's all rocks and timber, no ag, zero ag.
Yep.
So I'm food plot and native vegetation based. I'm in a county that's had one Pope and Young ever recorded. I'm sure there's been a few more harvested, but there's not a whole lot more. Somebody be bragging about it.
Okay.
One Pope and Young ever recorded, never a Boone and Crockett. Our best buck harvested, not dreamed of, harvested, is 173 inches. Nothing like it around us. And when we kill 150-inch deer every year.
Every single year.
Because we've converted old burnout cattle ranch into high-quality forage by using a natural system.
And that'll work here, too.
It'll work anywhere. I was just in North Carolina 2 weeks ago, just above Charlotte. just prescribed the exact same system. I was just about a month ago, I was just the other side of Spartanburg working for my good friend Rob Freeman over there. Just purchased a couple hundred acres, just laid the system out for him. Right there in your back door, folks, right there in Spartanburg.
Wow, because yeah. we spend a lot of money on fertilizers and lime.
You can save money and turn red dirt into black soil. No, people get impatient in this society, especially. It doesn't happen overnight. You know, we didn't destroy the soil overnight. We're not going to regenerate it overnight.
Yeah.
It takes a couple of growing seasons, but it will work. Unequivocally, it will work. Here's another thing I'd like to point out to folks. Am I boring you yet?
No, sir.
I get all wrapped up on this.
Go ahead.
I got some buddy farmers in North Dakota that have a real short growing season, and they average, annual average precipitation is 16 inches, of which 4 inches is in snow.
Snow.
Now, they get about 70 inches of snow, but when you melt it down, it's about 4 inches of moisture.
Okay.
Okay. 16 inches, they don't irrigate. All dry land. All dry land. They grow record crops. They have not put any commercial fertilizer out, no manure, no nothing, period, in 14 years. In 14 years, they've done nothing but use this system, growing earthworms, never bearing the soil. Never, they don't own a disc. On 5,000 acres, they don't disc. They don't own a disc.
Wow.
This commercial farmer making a living. He has no loans. He takes no government programs. He's extremely profitable. No government subsidies. Think about a farmer.
That's,
no government subsidies. You know, his favorite saying is, I want to sign the back of the check, not the front of the check. And he's doing it by keeping a living root in the ground. Like when he plants corn, he never just plants corn. He's got three varieties of clover underneath it. And you know what else he's found out? This is just so many savings here.
Okay.
His combine gets 4 gallons. It burns 4 less gallons of diesel fuel per hour because he discovered the combine tires rolling on that clover, basically water, is much less friction than rolling on bare dirt.
Go figure that one.
So his clover is pumping nitrogen into the corn. He puts no nitrogen on his corn. His clover's pumping nitrogen to the corn, and it's saving wear and tear and diesel fuel on his combine. And, of course, the clover chokes out all the weeds the way he's got it set up, so he's not using any herbicide. He's got organic corn.
Good gracious.
Yeah, and the deer he grows, and he's not a deer guy, right? He's a farmer.
Okay, sure.
The deer this guy grows, he doesn't even know what he has.
They're a byproduct to him.
Yeah, that's why I like him, because he doesn't know what he has. Hey, can I come hunt? Yeah, shoot some of these things. Those antlers are so big, they knock my corn down. Would you get rid of some of those big old bucks for you? Well, if you want me to. Okay.
If I have to.
Yeah, okay.
Wow. They can find all this at Growing Deer TV, right?
Oh, man, I love it. I'm sharing about the buffalo. Here's what I did this year. I planted my wife's garden. I call it the buffalo system because we're replicating what buffaloes did to the natural prairie. I put 25 different species of garden plants. You know, sometimes people just look at you and they're thinking, that boy's cookies aren't cool. Yeah. So I go to the local feed and seed, and I walk in and say, I want one scoop of every garden variety y'all sell. And like, this boy is crazy. I mean, I got, you know, 4 or 5 types of beans, pumpkins, cucumbers, squashes I never even heard of before. They got all kind of funky squashes anymore.
Oh, yeah. Decorative carrots, squashes.
Spinach, you know, okra. I mean, I got one scoop of everything, literally, all right?
Okay.
Ended up being $35.44. I bring it home, stir it all together in 1 5-gallon bucket. It looked like a rainbow color seeds in there. Pour it in my Genesis drill and plant the edge of my food plot with mama's garden variety. And I planted right through my standing fall crop. So
okay.
I'm planting 4-foot tall wheat and rye and stuff like that, right?
Okay.
And then I wait a couple of days, and I bring the crimper in there and crimp it down. So now I got my mulch, my weed mat, because I hate pulling weeds out of mama's garden.
Okay.
This is right behind my house. It's right at the edge of the food plot. I got my garden going. Now, it's not a traditional garden. I don't have a row of carrots and a row of tomatoes. You walk down the row, you don't know what's coming up. The plants are so small now, I can't identify half of them. But it's working. The only thing not working the other morning, I got up real early, right, cracked the daylight, looked out the window, and there's 5 deer standing in the garden.
There we go.
Mama said, get them deer out of here.
Those deer are yours in the fall. Until then, get them out of my way.
That's right. Mama likes seeing them except in her garden.
Yep. I'll be.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. We got on growing deer, even showed how to plant our garden on growing deer. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the quickest, cheapest garden. No tilling, no nothing. I just drill through one pass, we're done. Next step is picking the veggies.
Picking the veggies when they're ripe. Might have to tune back in and watch that one.
I'm just hoping the deer don't eat all the watermelons up.
There you go. Got to have some watermelons in the fall.
Got to have watermelons, buddy. Man, I appreciate your time.
Man, Grant, this has been great. Appreciate you working me in. We're gonna get this one out and let people listen to this one. And then we're going to come back here in a month or so, and we're going to talk to CWD because that's a big issue.
I look forward to it, man.
Thank you, Grant. Take care of yourself.
Take care, man.
Yep.
Bye-bye.
And with that music, we've reached the last really short segment of another Saturday on Woods and Water South Ghana. Appreciate you listening in. Hope you've enjoyed it. Like I said, I was gonna do some recordings with Andy and Casey and those down at Sabine, and yeah, it's 95 degrees. Those guys were just roasting out there, and it just wasn't a good time to do it. So I'm gonna catch up with both of them. I actually got Andy. We sat down this week and talked, and we got another segment with him coming up next week because he talked so long, I had to break it up in two segments. And when you get Grant Woods on the, are you gonna just tell him, hey Grant, your time's up, we can't talk anymore? So you just let him talk because it's great information. Growing Deer TV is where you need to go for any information on what Grant's doing. Got his start right here in South Carolina and just a world-renowned expert on whitetails and all. Good show. Good show. Love doing shows. Anyway, hey, summertime, make time to get out there. Take the back roads when you can. Don't forget your camera. See you back next week with more Woods and Water South Carolina. From behind, yes, I'm